how do we actually tackle and manage the grid physics? The answer is, as we all know, is flexibility primarily. 80% of all the energy we use in our homes is for heating. So why don't we see if we can find a way of making 80% of all domestic energy consumption entirely flexible, seeing as we have to move away from fossil fuels anyway.
So with how are you thinking about the huge wall of inertia that you're fighting against here?
Well, we have to chip away at it. We have to take it a step at a time. We have to keep demonstrating that there is a better way of doing things that enables them to take their own steps along the decarbonisation journey.
My assumption is, surely the best thing to do is to install a battery, so a lithium-ion battery, put electric heating in, and then you store the energy as chemical energy rather than heat energy.
There are a few key challenges with doing something like that today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back for another episode of Modo, the podcast. In today's episode, Quentin is talking to Johan Duplessis, CEO and founder of Tepio. If you're enjoying the podcast, please hit like and subscribe and all the good buttons. It really means the world to us. And if you want to see more content, head over to LinkedIn or our platform where we've got loads more going on. And with that, let's jump in.
So Tepio, T-E-P-E-O, where did that come from?
Good question. It is actually Latin. It means I am warm. So I guess when I was thinking about starting a heating business, obviously the most important thing to do first is to come up with a name. So no, that's where I went.
Nice. And so I assume nobody else has got this name apart from the Romans 2,000 years ago.
The Romans had it, but no one since that we're aware of. There's a lot of similar names. I think we sometimes get confused with TEPCO, which we're certainly not. But that's kind of part of finding a good name, I guess, finding something that's unique and not really used much, but has, I suppose, some meaning, although I'd say less than 1% of the people who come across us have any idea what it means, but that doesn't matter.
So you describe Tepio as a heating company. And heating is kind of sexy again now, right? Because forever, no one really cared about it. And now energy and infrastructure is important. And we've got heat pumps and storage heaters and all these other things that people are getting installed. And it's like a moral imperative to do so. So what do you guys do in the world of heating?
I can't believe you said it's sexy, because that's awesome. I think I think there are still most
Dude,
people.
That
still...
is my opinion, right? I find some weird stuff. I'm into batteries, dude.
Well, okay, yeah, that is true. That is true. But I think, but it's a good point, because actually, part of what I've set out to do is to try and make heating sexy again, because I think it is such an enormous challenge to get our heads around and to solve. And I think the first step of that is probably to get some of the battery crowd more excited about heating, because that's kind of, for me, that is the next evolution. You know, we've started down the road of, you know, transitioning towards, you know, batteries and EVs and that kind of thing. The really big thing to tackle is heating. So yeah, we are making it, trying to make it sexy, or at least elevate the conversation. For most people, a boiler is a white box that sits in a cupboard that they never look at or never see until one morning they wake up and their heating doesn't work, and then they get quite angry. So, you know, it is a real challenge to how you build a brand in this space and really elevate the conversation, because it's kind of what we need.
So to get this straight, so what does Tepio do? We've talked about boilers briefly there, but what's so special about what you guys do?
So what we do is we have a technology that enables you to get away from heating your home with fossil fuels. The ZEB, or zero emission boiler, which we've developed, is a direct plug and play replacement for a fossil fuel boiler. The key really is we are able to give you the same heat output that you have from a gas or an oil boiler or an LPG boiler, but we're switching the fuel source to electricity. But critically, this is not a direct electric flow boiler, because that would be terrible for the grid. So what we do is we have a very ultra high density thermal storage medium inside the device. And we use that to store 40 kilowatt hours of high density thermal energy. So we take electricity from the grid, turn it into heat, store it, and then we can ship that out into your heating system, into your central heating system, your radiators, your underfloor heating, as needed. So that's really what at the heart of it, what we're doing with the product. And that's key because we need to move people away from fossil fuels. Obviously, electrification of heat is the way to go. And the reason I started the business was really coming at this initially from the angle of, you know, how are we going to manage a highly renewable grid when we move towards distributed renewable generation that we lose control of? How do we actually tackle and manage the grid physics? The answer is, as we all know, is flexibility primarily. 80% of all the energy we use in our homes is for heating on average in the UK. So why don't we see if we can find a way of making 80% of all domestic energy consumption entirely flexible, seeing as we have to move away from fossil fuels anyway. So I really came at it from that angle. And I was working for VCharge, which we were bought by Kaluza, so by OVO, yeah, rebranded as Kaluza. So with that sort of VPP hat on, but then actually looking at heating and thinking, well, I really think there's a lack of innovation in this space. No one is trying to make this sexy. No one is trying to do what Tesla managed to do with EVs. So we need to try and disrupt this sector. It's a very entrenched sector. It's stuck in its ways and it needs someone to come and shake it up a little bit. So, you know, we all know about heat pumps, and heat pumps are a critical part of the electrification of heat solution. But there are lots of reasons why the rollout of heat pumps has been woefully inadequate, to be frank, to date. It's picking up a little bit now.
One of them.
Well, yeah. Well, Daily Mail and others. But really what's behind that is an industry that doesn't want to change. And, you know, the Hello Hydrogen lobby group, which is, you know, unashamedly funded by EUA and I understand it.
What's EUA? Sorry.
Sorry, Energy Utilities Alliance. But there are others. And obviously the gas network is here to, you know, fight for its existence. So there is going to be significant resistance to change. But unless new people come into this industry and into this space with new technology to disrupt it, my fear is that it won't happen.
So I want to ask a few questions about some points you made there. But before we do, where does you think about heating and boilers a lot, right? So where does the UK sit compared to the rest of the world, say the rest of Europe or the US? How do they do heating in those countries, and how do we do it in the UK? And how is that the same or is it different?
There are some quite significant differences in different regions. So you're over in the US now. Mostly in the US, they have air-to-air systems. So they don't. There are wet central heating systems, but it's much more common to have ducted heating systems. And that actually has the added benefit that you can put in an air-to-air heat pump and get air conditioning, because I think no one in the US can live without air conditioning, which is not necessarily great either. But
hold on. It's 100 degrees here right now. So 40 Celsius. It is okay, bonkers.
Fair enough. I think that is reasonable. It doesn't always need to be 21 degrees in the room, but that's maybe different. But yeah, I think more of us are going to need air conditioning, obviously, even in the UK. But in most of Europe, we have hydronic systems, so wet-based central heating systems, radiators, underfloor heating. The UK is plumb last with heat pump rollout. So mostly, most countries are taking the approach of trying to encourage heat pump adoption. And in some countries, it's going better than others. So Germany is doing all right. France has a very high penetration of electric heating anyway, partly due to the history with nuclear. Ireland has a ton of oil. They don't really have a gas network. So different countries deal with it differently. And most of it's historical. You know, central heating systems in the UK only really came about in the 50s and 60s, coincided with, you know, the discovery of North Sea oil and gas. So, you know, it's not a coincidence that we ended up building a gas network to distribute gas through most of the country and use it for heating. But there's a lot of interesting history around, like, yeah, why we've ended up as where we are. The UK is, as I said, probably plumb last. Part of the reason for that is, as a country, we seem to be unable to invest in our housing stock. And I don't know whether, I mean,
what does that mean? Sorry, plumb last. That's a new phrase for me.
Well, just the bottom of the pack. I mean, in the UK, we are the slowest country really to be decarbonizing our housing stock, our heating systems in our housing stock. So, you know, most of us, 90 plus percent of us, are still burning gas to heat our homes. I think it's about 3 or 4% oil. And that change is just not really happening very quickly. We don't invest in our houses. You know, we have incredibly leaky homes. And I think that doesn't help, because as soon as you're trying to move towards something like a heat pump, you'd really need to make sure that your home is as insulated as you can, or appropriately insulated, I'll put it that way.
Okay. And so I kind of like the fight against gas heating as a concept. There's a real like David and Goliath vibe to it. You've got these massive infrastructure. Well, you've got all these pipes and infrastructure that moves gas around the place. And the folks who own that infrastructure, there is a world where none of those gas pipes are used in the future, right? It's all stranded assets. They are essentially useless in a world of complete electrification. And then, so that's an interesting thing in a lobby group. And then you've got probably some of the craziest parts of the hydrogen nonsense lobby in the hydrogen heating in homes. And then you've got the traditional, boiler companies, combi boilers, who are very good at making gas boilers and will do, it appears, anything to keep hold of that market. And this is all very exciting for a new entrant to come along with a new system and say, you don't need any of that, and we can do it differently with electricity. So how are you thinking about the huge wall of inertia that you're fighting against here?
Well, I try not to think about it too much, because it is a big wall. Well, we have to chip away at it. We have to take it a step at a time. We have to keep demonstrating that there is a better way of doing things. And I think we have to prove to consumers that, you know, our product does a great job and actually is really simple to use and actually low cost and enables them to take their own steps along the decarbonization journey. We talk a lot to the government, to policymakers, to help them understand that there's a better way of doing things. But yeah, I mean, the incumbents are going to be resistant to change, and it is a massive wall of inertia. I guess, you know, if you look at what's happened in the transport space with EVs, you know, there are parallels there. You know, that there was 10 years ago, you know, very few EVs around, and the infrastructure really wasn't there. So you can equally say, you know, there was a hell of a lot of inertia there that they were up against, because there was no charging network. And the way they did it, and I suppose, you know, like him or loathe him, I mean, what Musk has done with Tesla is create a product which consumers just love. And he created this consumer pull, which is then, you know, cascaded through the market. And now you have every car maker doing the same thing. So if we can prove that there is consumer pull and the consumers really, really want to decarbonize their heating and that they love our product and this type of technology, then I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 years' time all the gas boiler companies are doing something similar. I say I wouldn't be surprised. That was my optimistic response. maybe I would be surprised in 5 years. I'd be very pleased. But that is what we're trying to do.
But also, it's not the first time this has happened, right? So I still remember when I was a kid, we used to get coal delivered to a coal bunker back in the 90s, and that's not that long ago. And so, of course, no one does that anymore, and that's crazy. But we did move off coal to gas, and we've made these kind of transitions before. Let's see. I hope we can do it very quickly. So let's talk about Tepio's technology for a moment. What is it that you guys build, and how does it work?
Yeah. So the ZEB zero emission boiler that we produce, we design in house, we manufacture it. We sell it. We own it. We don't own it. We operate it. The customer owns it. We operate it. The product is the size of a washing machine. It is effectively an ultra high density thermal battery heat store. It stores 40 kilowatt hours of thermal energy. It's connected to your fuse box, to your consumer unit. And basically what the product's doing is it's charging off the mains and storing energy as heat. And we then have a bunch of patents around the way we can control that heat and extract the heat from a solid storage medium and put it into a water-based system all inside the unit. And then that goes out to the home. So in terms of delivering heat, it's delivering hot water at up to 80 degrees, whatever you set in your on your app to control the unit, and it's heating your home in the same way as a gas or oil boiler. On the charging side, every ZEB is internet connected. So we built our own cloud-based infrastructure. So we then do some machine learning in the cloud to forecast your heat demand for your home. So we get a ton of data from your ZEB, how it's being asked for heat, how much heat is delivering into the home, when you're using heat. All of that's going into our cloud infrastructure and used to basically create this heat demand forecast. That then goes into an optimization engine, and we plug in a bunch of pricing signals. So, you know, your particular tariff that you're on, so some sort of flexible tariff, Octopus Go or Agile or an E7 tariff or whatever. We have some type of use tariffs as well that we can talk about. We plug in carbon intensity, so local carbon intensity of your grid. And you can then choose as a user, I want my ZEB to optimize charging based on the carbon intensity of my local network so that I'm only using the greenest electricity. Or I can say I'm sort of mostly cost conscious, but also a bit carbon conscious, so I can have a bit of both. And so we're then optimizing that charging and decoupling the consumption of heat from the demand for electricity from the grid. And I think that is absolutely crucial because, one, it means that you can electrify heating with a product that doesn't have the COP that you have with a heat pump. It's 100% efficient, but it doesn't have that kind of 2.5 times multiplier that you can get with a heat pump, or three.
What is a COP? What's a COP, Johan?
Yeah, sorry. COP is coefficient of performance. So in simple terms, with a heat pump, what you're doing is you're taking one unit of electricity and you're using that to effectively extract heat from the outdoors and put it into your home, a bit like a reverse refrigerator fridge. So in doing so with a heat pump, you can use one unit of electricity and create three units of heat, call it. The challenge is that with a heat pump, you then ideally need to be heating continuously throughout the day. It's not designed really to support peaks and troughs. It can, to an extent. There is some flexibility in the way you use it. But the way that consumers live, people live in their homes, particularly in the UK, is they're used to central heating systems where they just go, boom, I want it hot now, and they expect the house to be hot in an hour. You can't do that with a heat pump in the same way. But so if you imagine with a heat pump, you're consuming electricity throughout the day. With a ZEB, we have a one-to-one relationship between electricity and heat into your home, but we have huge amounts of flexibility about when we consume that electricity. So that was really key because it allows you to choose the very cheapest times of day. So the off-peak rate on some tariffs is a quarter of the peak rate. So you can use all of that off-peak electricity and store it until you need it for your home. But also it's a big enabler of flexibility.
It used to be that I think Octopus used to get like 50 pence a kilowatt hour and 7.5p overnight. So the saving was pretty big. And so is the way that it works, most of the time you're just, do we use the word charge here? The word charge,
yep.
Like a battery?
Yeah. So you can say charge.
You'll take your ZEB and charge it up with heat overnight when it's cheap and then use it when you need it later. And how good is a ZEB at, which is my favorite new term, holding heat? So when it stores that charge in battery parlance, you know, how much does it lose across the day? Say you charge it, you know, overnight 2-4 o'clock in the morning, and you want it for that 7 p.m. peak, which is, you know, 16-17 hours away. Doesn't it not self-discharge across the day?
So it does, to an extent. There are some heat losses. So if you fully charged a ZEB and just left it sitting, it would have usable heat after about 10 days. So it's going to take about 10 days for all of that heat to, well, most of the heat to dissipate. But there's a decay curve. So, you have more heat loss in the first day. So if it was fully charged, you'd lose about 20% of the heat in the first day. However, that is not the way that it actually works in practice, because you wouldn't have the heat in there that long. This is not like a storage heater, which, you know, storage heaters get a really bad reputation because, well, there's actually conceptually nothing wrong with them, but they were never designed with consumers in mind. So they kind of really were designed in the 70s to get rid of nuclear energy at nighttime. But But actually what they can do for you is store energy. And but with storage heaters, they're kind of, because they're reheating the room, they're also designed to release heat into the room. Our product is very much designed to keep it in the box and only extract it into the water system when there's a call for heat. So useful, the efficiency into the water system over a year is about 85%. It does depend on your usage. However, when it's installed inside the heating envelope, it's actually basically 100% efficient because the heat losses are going into the home like as if it was a radiator. So that's basically how it works. I should say that the whole concept of nighttime, you know, nighttime off peak is changing, and you know, we see peaks and troughs throughout the day now. So for example, we currently have a trial with OVO where they've given us effectively a type of use tariff. And so the concept there is we have this flexible price signal throughout the day from OVO that automatically goes into our cloud infrastructure. So we're optimizing for those consumers based on a flexible price signal throughout the day, but the customer pays a flat rate whenever the ZEB charges. And so what that means is that we now have flexibility to charge throughout the day. It's not about charging, you know, midnight till 4 a.m. And then using that heat for the rest of the day. It's actually charging some in the some in the early morning, some around lunchtime when there's excess solar, you know, some before the evening peak because, you know, there's a dip or whatever. So it's much, much more flexible than that. And that's kind of the world that we're moving to. And if you look at the broader kind of the electricity market changes and things like REMA and half hourly settlement and all these sort of things that are going to happen over the next number of years, this is all about trying to encourage more flexibility. So, you know, we need more price signals to really get the most out of this flexibility. But most people today use it on a really basic level, just on a, you know, an off-peak overnight tariff.
And you guys build this in the UK. You manufacture here in the UK. Well, I'm not in the UK right now, but there in the UK.
Yeah, we do it all ourselves. We kind of out of necessity because we were sort of developing the product and then wanting to build and get it out. The core itself is quite a complex bit of engineering and quite complex to produce. So we do it ourselves for now. I don't think that will always be the case. So yeah, you know, we are scaling our own manufacturing capacity quite quickly now. But it's probably going to come a time in the next couple of years when we need to outsource that.
It's almost exotic to manufacture in the UK these days or start a manufacturing business in the UK. how many ZEBs do you guys manufacture in a year, say?
So we right now we have capacity for about 900 a year. We are taking on another facility. But it'll be up and running by the end of this year to more than triple that. So that's sort of the scale we're at the moment. So we're still relatively small scale, but we're growing quite quickly. There's obviously a massive market out there, so yeah, plenty of room to grow.
That's a lot. So you got roughly three a day right now, and you're going to get to near enough 10 a day. That's a lot of boilers being manufactured in the UK. Whereabouts are you guys based?
It is. I should say we're not at that rate today. We have the capacity to get to that rate, so we're working up towards that rate over the next number of months. We're based just outside Reading on the M4 corridor. Not a classic part of the world to be manufacturing, and certainly not the cheapest part of the world to be doing it either. So, you know, that doesn't matter for now. You know, this part of the UK gives us great access to engineers and talent and people to build the business. I think it will always be our HQ down here, partly because I live around here as well. It's sort of not entirely a coincidence. But there will be in the longer term, I suspect we'll be moving to other parts of the UK to manufacture. But you know, I think there's no reason why we can't manufacture in the UK. I think we should be doing it. I think we used to do it so well. There are lots of reasons why we do much less of it nowadays. But there's a real appetite to support it. And I think if we can become the leaders in this next generation of heating technology, why not do it here? And there's also a sort of a practical element to it as well, which is that, you know, the product is quite heavy. You know, it's a high density thermal store. It's effectively, you can think of it a bit like a high density concrete inside. So, you know, transportation costs start to become a bit of a challenge if you're transporting the whole product from, say, China or the, you know, far, far away.
And how big is the problem? Like, how many boilers do we have to turn into ZEBs?
Well, there are 27 million homes in the UK. Today, we just in the UK, we install about 1.8 million boilers every year, gas boilers, 1.6 to 1.8 million. So typical boiler lasts about 14 years. So that's kind of how your maths gets out to around 25 odd million homes. You know, I get very frustrated when people talk about, you know, we can't decarbonize heating fast enough, because actually all the boilers that are installed today are going to have to be replaced anyway within the next 14 years, because typically they only last that long anyway. So we can do it, but the way to do that is we have to come up with a product and a technology that can fit into the replacement cycle. So you asked how many ZEBs have to be installed. I definitely don't think that all of them are going to be ZEBs. They're not. I think heat pumps are going to be the majority solution. They need to be. And I think they need to be, because we have to tackle the overarching problem with the volume of energy that we are going to need to heat homes with electrically. And so the coefficient of performance with heat pumps allows you to basically get that volume reduction. But what ZEBs are going to do is they're going to complement that by ZEBs and other smart thermal storage technology is going to complement that heat pump rollout with enormous amounts of flexibility, so that as we're electrifying heating, we're also embedding a huge amount of flexibility into the extents of the electricity network to support it. So yeah, I mean it's a huge market. So even if we're, you know, even if we're at in the tens of thousands, we're kind of at 1% of the gas boiler market. So last year there were about 50,000 heat pumps installed. So yeah,
woeful, really. We need to kind of 10x that. Well, I want to just have a discussion about playing out what happens in this market. It seems obvious that well, I've got a bias here, right? So my bias is that I think that electrification of heat is a key part of getting to net zero in countries like the UK. And electrification is basically the best use of capital and resources to get it, to do that as fast as possible. That's my belief. As much as possible, there's obviously some areas that will continue to use fossil fuels, but there are niche cases. But in general, the average home, I think, should be using electricity to heat. That's my opinion. And if you assume that that is actually what's going to play out, and there's lots of reasons to suggest that, just purely on an economic basis, on a kind of pence per therm or kilowatt hour basis. If you assume that's what's going to happen, then what's the game theory here with all of the you know, the gas networks and the boiler companies and the lobby? What happens next? You guys would have put a lot of thought into this, I'm sure.
I mean, yes. I mean, when I first started really looking at this industry and the challenge about sort of 7 years ago, what you see is, yeah, you see a very entrenched industry, as I was saying earlier, that are desperately lobbying to keep their infrastructure. And my take on it is, you know, there are only two options that we know of today to heat your home, that potentially heat your home. One is electricity, and the other is with a gas like hydrogen in a lower carbon world. The gas lobby has latched on to hydrogen, because if they can sell hydrogen as a concept, obviously they can continue to pump that down the existing infrastructure. But if you want to be more cynical, it also allows them to continue to extract fossil fuels for longer, and claim that we can get there with, you know, brown hydrogen or blue hydrogen and use CCUS, carbon capture and storage. So that is the, but I think that is the truth of it, is that they believe that if they push hydrogen hard enough and explain to policymakers, explain to consumers that electrification is going to be too difficult for them and too expensive, and the hydrogen is just going to be simple because you'll just have to replace your boiler with a hydrogen compatible boiler, and that will be, you know, everything done, and, you know, you can carry on your life. The truth is, though, that even if technically it was feasible, the end consumer is going to be paying an absolute fortune for their heating, because, you know, your efficiency loss with creating hydrogen, you just wouldn't bother doing it. It's a really, really bad use of hydrogen. There are lots of good uses of hydrogen potentially. You know, the domestic heating is right at the bottom. But I think the game here for them is, you know, if we can convince policymakers that the electrification is too difficult and that hydrogen is an easy win, once we've set off down that path, it'll be very difficult to turn back. Once we've invested in all that infrastructure, once we've said that, you know, you're not going to be able to electrify the heating in your home, you're going to have to use hydrogen, then that decision is made. We would look back on that decision in you know, decades time and say, well, those consumers using hydrogen are paying a fortune for their heating, and it would be a mistake. But I don't think that's of concern to the people, to the sort of the companies involved. So I mean, that's, I think that's the honest truth of it. But I my approach has been, sounds a little bit like I'm apologizing here, but I definitely don't, I don't want to, I'm not a hydrogen lobby basher. I don't think that's, it's particularly helpful to have a big argument about it. I think they're going to carry on regardless.
I'll happily do that for you. Don't worry.
Okay, fine. Maybe I will then. No, I think you'll do a better job of it. But I think the answer is going to become clear itself. That was always my view. Like, electrification is so obvious. Technically, as an engineer, it is just the much more logical solution. And it's sad to me that we're going to waste billions of pounds, and lobbyists are going to waste millions of pounds trying to push hydrogen for domestic heating. But I think it will be self-defeating in the end. So I think we'll end up electrifying it. The only downside is that, you know, we would have lost time. Progress would have been slower, which is obviously not ideal. But I think we'll get to the same place in the end.
And how about the divide between when should a house use a zero emissions boiler and when should a house use a heat pump?
Our ZEB is sized for homes up to the median by heat demand. So that is a home that today would be burning around 12,000 kilowatt hours of gas a year, which you can see on your utility bill. And typically that looks like a sort of a 2-3 bed semi-detached terraced house, that kind of size and below. And the simple reason for that is that because there's a one-to-one relationship between electricity usage and heat, while we're very flexible, if your house needs too much heating in peak winter, you just simply cannot get enough electricity into the home on a single phase supply. So for larger homes, absolutely, a heat pump needs to be the answer, potentially a combination. So we are looking at hybrid solutions where you could potentially combine a heat pump with something like a ZEB to give you a high temperature boost at certain times of day. So that is an option. But typically those larger homes really are not going to be able to get away without some sort of heat pump. For smaller homes, the typical customers that we serve have tried to get a heat pump probably first because they're interested in decarbonizing the heating. And so they've explored that avenue and they end up coming to us because, for a variety of reasons. So it could be that, you know, the quote was outrageously expensive. Heat pumps can be incredibly expensive to install, not in all cases, but, you know, you're talking, it's definitely over £10,000. So it's quite significant. But also sometimes they don't have the space. There's space limitations. There's too much disruption required to their homes. I think the thing that people in this industry overlook time and time again is that, you know, people's homes are sort of sacred to them. You know, it's kind of part of your, you know, your family lives there. It's your space. And the idea of having huge amounts of disruption to it, to rip out radiators or to do various other infrastructure works, is unpalatable for many people. People don't like, even though it may seem not a massive sacrifice, people don't like that level of disruption and change. So we basically can avoid that by installing a ZEB. So that's basically the types of homes that we install in. So smaller homes where they don't have the space outside for a heat pump, they might need to replace lots of radiators and do lots of other infrastructure work in their home, and it ends up being too expensive.
And why wouldn't, you must have done the maths on this. The first thing that comes to mind is, surely my assumption is the best thing to do is to install a battery, so a lithium-ion battery or equivalent in a home, put electric heating in, and then if the round-trip efficiency of the battery is, like, I don't know, 90% plus, then the battery does the charging and discharging depending on carbon or price, And then you store the energy as chemical energy rather than heat energy, because I would have thought that that would be more efficient. But I assume that's there's more to it, right? Because there's CapEx, so costs, these home batteries are pretty expensive, and some other things. So how are you guys thinking about that problem?
I see it as a sort of parallel market, but you know, we do keep an eye on it because the battery technology is improving all the time and coming down in cost. I think that there are a few key challenges with doing something like that today. One is the energy density. So the energy density of our product is significantly higher than you're going to get with a chemical battery. So a big Tesla Powerwall is, I think they're about 10 kilowatts at the moment, or 9 or 10 kilowatt hours, sorry. Our product's storing 40 kilowatt hours. And that's important because back on that kind of median home that I was talking about, that's sort of the top end of the size that we would be looking at, on the coldest day of the year, your heat demand for a home like that is going to be around 70 kilowatt hours. So if you have a chemical battery, you really have to have at least about 40 kilowatt hours of storage to be flexible enough to get enough cheap off-peak electricity to heat your home.
Which probably costs you about 30, 40 grand pounds in CapEx.
And so that's the first problem, CapEx. So our product is today is £5,000. So it's a, you know, it's whatever. If it's £40,000, it's an eighth of what you would pay in lithium ion batteries. So that's the first thing. The second thing is power. So in your the ZEB is outputting 15 kilowatts of thermal output. So if you need that kind of amount to really be heating a home on that winter day. So now you're talking about a pretty high power output for a chemical battery as well. So I believe like the power walls are typically sized, or most domestic batteries are sized at around 2 or 3 kilowatts. So I'm not an expert on this, so I know you get bigger ones, but so you would need to have at least 4 separate batteries running in parallel, discharging all full power at the same time to give you enough thermal power output. So that's a challenge. You also then need to be able to charge them bloody quickly as well.
I say more copper on your connection as well. So the distribution network operators might have a few things to say about that as well.
Yeah. And then the last thing to say as well is that in terms of the round trip efficiency, is maybe if you said it's a 90% with the lithium ion, with a ZEB, maybe it's 85 over across the year, but the heat losses are going to the house anyway. And the storage medium is not degrading. So with a ZEB, there's no degradation to the storage material over time. So you're not losing capacity. So, you know, it will last 20 years without changing. And so that's really key as well. So because you're having to, if you were going to use lithium ion, you're going to have to cycle your batteries a lot, which they're not going to love over a period of time. So they're unlikely to last the same time. And certainly we'll have some degradation over that period. And then I suppose lastly, I just think that we have so many better uses for chemical batteries. You know, we should be putting them into really high value use cases like EVs and other things. So I just don't think that there's the environmental impact of lithium ion and that sort of thing, I think is probably a little bit wasted in a domestic setting. And so our view is, you know, if you can do it with a non-toxic, very readily available, low cost material that doesn't degrade or lose storage capacity, why wouldn't you do that for, you know, dealing with 80% of your heat, of your energy demand in your home as heating? And you can maybe have a smaller lithium ion battery for the remaining 20% of this electrical demand, or you can use your EV for that flexibility.
Cool. So the first thing I want to say is congrats on raising your Series A. That's pretty huge. And you've got some great investors on board to help you get to the next phase. This is your chance to plug anything. Have you got any announcements or anything that you want the world to hear?
Well, I think we're growing really quickly. What would I plug? I mean, I would encourage people to think hard about their heating system. It's the unloved part of decarbonization. Go home tonight when you've listened to this and have a think about how you're heating your home and how would you decarbonize the way you heat your home. Look into heat pumps. Look into thermal storage. It needs a serious look. We're not raising at the moment. You know, we're well funded. We're growing quickly. We currently don't cover the whole of the UK, so we've got enough demand in the parts of the UK that we do cover. But we want to get national coverage. So, you know, go and have a look at our product. There are sort of customer stories on the website, and look out for us because we're coming.
And now my favorite question, which is, what is your contrarian view? So what do you believe about the world of net zero or heating in your special case that is a little bit unusual?
I have a few. I think my maybe what I would say is that within the heating space, there has been too much of a relentless focus on energy efficiency, and actually that we should be more interested in carbon efficiency. And there's been too much emphasis on relying only on the COP of heat pumps and assuming that they can be a silver bullet, when actually homes are, every single home in this country is different in some way. There are a lot of nuances in this space. And to solve that problem, we need more than one technology. And that actually flexibility can be as important to support a future energy grid as the coefficient of performance and efficiency that heat pumps can give. So that would be my contrarian view. I think flexibility could be as important in a future world on the electricity grid as energy efficiency.
Right. Well, Johan, I just want to say a massive thank you for taking time out of your day to speak to us. If you're listening to this, check out Tapio. If you are somewhere between 1 and 14 years of your boiler, you absolutely need to consider getting one of these things installed in your house. So go to tapio.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. And of course, if you're listening to this and you haven't yet hit subscribe and like and all of those buttons, please hit them right now. It gives us all motivation to carry on with this thing. All right, take care. And thanks, Johan, for joining us on the pod.
Thanks, Quentin.